a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning and welcome to a brand new day as we get ready to celebrate another weekend here in Utah. Beautiful temperatures expected, by the way, but right now I think most of us, especially if you love to play in the white stuff, are probably wishing for some other weather to come our way, and it just doesn't look like it's there in the seven-day forecast, but we're going to talk more about that coming up in just a minute. Just a reminder, of course, that we're recording this program on Thursday this week, and so we're still looking at sunny skies and temperature expectations in the lower 40s. Tim Hughes broadcasting and recording today at the studios at Broadcast House in downtown Salt Lake City. Also joining me, of course, Mr. Navidomskis, or as we like to call him around these parts sometimes, Nostradomskis, because he knows all things. Who we're catching on the road today because you're headed up skiing.
Yes, I am. My wife and I are going to ski on the rocks, for MLK weekend, which is an annual tradition. We're gonna get some ski days in and, until we can't cope.
Yeah, usually opera includes something on the rocks, but it's not your skiing that's supposed to be on the rocks for you these days. I think my wife is actually also getting in line with you, isn't she?
Yes, she is. She's already texted me. She said, she told us where she's meeting us.
Yeah. Well, with you two, there are a few days in the week that I might, catch you on the mountain these days with her in full retirement. Anyway, we'll talk more about that in just a minute. I want to bring Bob Grove also in from Road Tripping with Bob and Mark. Hello there, sir.
Howdy.
Is that the way you people talk in Southern Utah now?
No, I was a little distracted. I was just looking at some of the photos on Facebook that Mark's been taking down in Cabo of these wells.
Yeah, I was going to mention you're flying solo this week because he's down there in Mexico. And it looks like he's enjoying himself on whale watching or swimming with the dolphins or something.
Yeah, it looks like he's down to the last couple of days down there, but he's had a great time. He's used his time well getting out there. It looks like the weather's been really nice.
Yeah. For anybody wondering where Russ Smith is from SkyCall, we're kind of wondering the same thing. I haven't heard from him. He went to visit family in Mississippi, then just kept driving, connected with me in Florida around New Year's, and for all I know, he might be in Mexico right now. But we'll look forward to connecting with him and finding out about his adventures when he makes his return. I already raised the question about the snow and the way our weather has been. Navi, we need to be careful because I don't want to discourage people or demean our resorts for the work that they're doing, but Mother Nature just has not been kind to us so far if you're a skier.
No, this is an epic La Nina. Sometimes we're on the cusp when we get a La Nina. We can get the tail end of a lot of storms, but that high that's sitting on us, that high pressure has pushed everything north, and it's barely making to the bottom of Idaho. Conversely, in the south, it's going across Arizona, and Texas has more snow than we have.
Yeah. Matter of fact, James from Texas, who usually checks in with us, and he's I think sending me a message as we speak about that. He joins us in our news segment or news of the week segment. He was talking about how unusual it is for the folks down in Texas to be dealing with snow on the ground, but that's the case right now.
Absolutely. We're going to try to maybe make our spring break to the south this year.
Yeah. Bob doesn't relate to any of this because they don't have snow down where he lives.
Well, I don't know if you've looked at some of the pictures I've got on Facebook from Zion, not this year, but in fact, we've had some snow up at Zion this year. But in the past, I've got some pictures that I posted that have, there's been seasons with some pretty deep snow up there.
Yeah. This just doesn't happen to be one of them, unfortunately. And Navi, last weekend, you and I and our wives were skiing Park City, and we pulled up on the Mid-Mountain water storage pond there, and it's getting, yeah, it's getting pretty low right now. And I don't know for sure. It's a question we can ask of Park City, but if that thing goes dry, does that prevent snow blowing from Mid-Mountain up?
Yeah, I would venture that is absolutely true. They got a lot of rules associated with that, you know, how much they can pump and spray. And those retainment ponds, they use those to put snow on the mountain until Mother Nature comes along and helps to get us a good start. But there's not going to be enough to get us through the whole season.
Yeah. So lots of concerns there. Matter of fact, it's something we just had a story meeting for Utah's Morning News, and it's something we're reaching out to the state on, our water management folks, just to see what their report is, how far behind we may be, and what the expectation or planning is for the future, not just for skiers, but now we're starting to talk about, you know, being able to water your lawn, shower, drinking water, all the rest of that, and where we stand right now as far as our reservoirs for, you know, water supply going into the spring and summer months of 2021. I wanted to talk to you, too, Navi, about something as a teacher, as a fisherman, something that was reported this morning. And I know it's not a new program. It's actually something that's been around for a while, and there are 44 Utah schools that are involved in this program where they take the trout eggs, the rainbow trout eggs, and distribute them around the state for the chance for kids in the classroom to actually raise them and eventually get them out into the wild in the stream. It's a fantastic program.
Yeah, they've been doing it for years. I can remember when I was in third grade, watching the eggs and the whole process is just fascinating. And we'd be so excited when the eggs became little fish and swam around. That was a great, great time, you know?
Yeah, and they call it the Trout in the Classroom program, or the TIC. Some call it the SIC. But they talk about it at all different levels, you know, for even little kids in kindergarten to see that egg become a small fry and then nurture it and give them some responsibility to take care of it every day and then feel really good about setting it free when it, you know, comes time to take it up to the stream itself. So
my buddy in fourth grade, he hooked that hose up, that oxygen hose, to the Bunsen burner hose, and they all died in our class.
Really?
Oh, yeah. That's
a nice note. Thanks for adding that to a feel-good story. So in kindergarten, they'd be focusing on caring and growth and understanding life cycles. High schools, they say, would explore more like water chemistry, the nitrogen cycle, as you just described, it went wrong, and things like watershed geology and ecology. But hats off again to not just the Division of Wildlife Resources, but all of the organizations that are involved with that program. It really is something on all levels. Let me tell you what's coming up on the show today. We will have our news of the week coming up in just a moment. We're also going to be talking, and Bob, you helped to arrange this, with Big Mountain Lodge, which is a place I was unfamiliar with, but it is a client of yours, and I guess Brad Benson will be joining us in the next half hour.
Yes, in Farron, Utah, in Emery County, this is a great place, and I'm looking forward to Brad being on the line to tell the audience more about it.
Well, and speaking of fishing, they have great proximity to some great places to do fishing up there, don't they?
Yeah, it's surrounded by some great fishing areas. Millsite, Huntington State Park, Schofield's about an hour and a half away, Joe's Valley. I mean, there's a lot of great places. Plus, it's right on the main route out to the San Rafael Swell, you know, one of the more popular sections of the swell for off-roading. So, yeah, it's in a great base camp location for all the adventure in Emery County.
We're headed up to Strawberry. Paul Phillips will check in with us for our Fish Bite segment this week. We'll get a full report, first-hand look at how the ice conditions are up there and what the fish count has been, what kind of success people have been having through the ice. Also, I had a chance yesterday. It was the only day I could catch up with him. At 7:05, I'll share a conversation that I had with Greg Paul, who is a common friend of yours, Bob, who told me he was headed your direction. I guess he's down in St. George right now, and they were looking for some hiking spots. But he just finished up an ice climbing adventure in Ouray, Colorado, a place that I was introduced to for the first time on our motorcycles this past summer and literally fell in love with. I had no idea that they were known worldwide for their ice park that they have developed there. So we'll share that conversation. And Emily Summers will join us for our snow day segment today at Deer Valley. We'll find out what the conditions are like and what the next couple of weeks ahead have in store for you if you're headed to Deer Valley to do some skiing. So stand down, guys. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have some news of the week. If all goes well, we'll be able to connect with James in Texas and give him a hard time about taking all of our snow away to the Lone Star State. Stay right there.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Welcome back to KSL Outdoors Radio. Nice to have you listening today for another beautiful day. Unfortunately, we wish we could tell you there was some snow coming in the forecast, but Bob, I think I found out where our snow ended up, and it's nowhere within the Beehive State. It's in Texas.
Yeah, where it shouldn't be.
Where it shouldn't be. So help me in saying good morning to James!
James!
Well, good morning, guys. I'm glad to hear you. Yes, the snow apparently bypassed the Beehive State for the Lone Star State. We got at least 4 inches of snow plus a thick coating of ice to knock down landlines, power lines, and even phone lines for a while. So we maintained power, but we lost phone for a while. But what my topic is today, I was reading in the Utah papers about an unusual thing.
Don't just gloss over the snow. We're curious about this. First of all, sorry about the ice. That's a real mess. But what do drivers in Texas do when there is 4 inches of snow on the ground?
They panic, and they still want to drive 85 when it's ice on the ground. And even growing up in Kansas and spending time in Utah, I know to slow down and give some distance between me and a driver ahead. But there's been many accidents, many people having to resort to space heaters when they got no other way of heating their homes. And I think just yesterday, 7 houses burnt down and all that because of people improperly just doing anything. Maybe stoking up a fireplace that hadn't been used in 20 years, no chimney sweep. So it's been a hair-raising experience, no pun intended, though. But it's anyhow, today it's a warmer day, but next week we're due for another cold front, so I'm cringing again and all that.
Yeah, well, Bob understands what a quote-unquote cold front is because he's in St. George. So cold to him is 55 degrees. I don't know what cold to you means in Texas, but...
Well, anyhow, I would love for it to be 55 the way it is now and all that.
Yeah.
There were a few days we were struggling to get out of the 30s, and that's unusual, even in my part of Northeast Texas and everything. So,
well, what's your topic today?
Okay, basically, anyhow, I was reading in the Utah papers about an unusual thing. It's affecting rabbits, both outdoor rabbits and also what I think listeners might be interested in is home pet rabbits. Apparently, it's a highly contagious rabbit virus that might even be spread to them by, I was reading in the article, cats, dogs, birds, and even humans and inanimate objects. And they don't know exactly what's causing it, but if I understand it correctly, the rabbit can just go from seemingly healthy to seemingly sick and swiftly die and all that. So
yeah.
Thought that would be of interest to readers that have, say, a pet rabbit to just kind of keep an extra eye on it, and it's just one more illness we got to keep on the out
look out for?
Well, so far, I don't want to freak people out too bad. It is called rabbit hemorrhagic disease because it only affects rabbits. So I want to make sure that that's the reporting on it.
Yeah.
And found in Utah, found only, by the way, in San Juan, Wayne, San Pete, and Iron counties. But they are still telling people, and there's no indication, by the way, that this is harmful to humans at all, but they're still asking for you to take some certain, steps to protect yourself so that you don't have the potential spread of it. The concern is that this virus, and we know a lot about viruses these days, can survive for months in the environment and actually spread from dead rabbits or through food, water, or any other contaminated materials. Like urine or feces of sick rabbits. So if your domesticated rabbit at home has not been in contact with any wild rabbits in the backyard, I think you're okay. But they
do. Of course, the article did say it could spread from cats and dogs to rabbits and everything. That's what kind of caught my eye.
Yeah, and maybe that's the thing that I skipped over. So it doesn't affect the cats, but it may be transferred through the cats.
Yeah, transmit and everything.
Yeah.
So anyhow, we just got to keep an eye on it. I'm glad you gave that proviso, Tim.
Well, and if they're talking, anybody out there that likes to go rabbit hunting, they're asking you to make sure that you don't eat, drink, or smoke while handling harvested animals and that all of your harvested game should be thoroughly cooked to an internal temperature of 165, which we would talk about anyway. And if you have any suspicions, by the way, if you have a domesticated rabbit, my grandkids have bunnies, you need to contact your veterinarian or the state veterinary's office to ask them, and they call it this RHDV2. If you have any concerns at all, I would go ahead and make that phone call. But always good to hear from you. And Bob started the show by saying, howdy from St. George. I've connected with somebody that can actually understand what howdy means.
Yeah. Well, even in Kansas, we use howdy and all that. And I've used it in happier times and all that, though.
All right, buddy.
Howdy from Texas. So take care.
Yeah, how do. Thank you. James from Texas. Real quick, because we're almost out of time here. I wanted to say thank you to you, first of all, Bob, for the pictures from Bryce. We were talking last week with Lance down there at Historic Ruby's, and your pictures were just fantastic.
Yeah, it was a good day other than the temperature. That's what photographers look for is light. So it's usually you got to hit the early morning, try to get that early light or later in the evening.
Yeah. On last week's show, we also talked about snowshoeing with a friend of mine that went out on his first experience with it. And I just want to tell people that if you want to see some amazing photos of people on snowshoes, you want to see the work of an artist. Let me see what his name is. Simon Beck. I put a link actually on our Facebook page, KSL Outdoors Radio, of this design that he made in a mountain field of snow, which is unbelievable. I'd love to know how long it actually took him to do it.
I've seen that picture. It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
I don't know how he did that. I to keep it so symmetrical, and the design is really awesome.
Lake Dillon, Silverthorne, Colorado, I guess is where he did it. Or there are some other photos of artwork that people have done with their snowshoes around the country. So if you get a chance to just check out our Facebook page, I think you're going to enjoy it. We'll take a break when we come back. Looking forward to a conversation and learning a little bit more, Bob, with a place that you are familiar with, and that is Big Mountain Lodge. That conversation after we get you a news update next.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.